somewhere else. One last cup of wine we will pour, and I'll kiss you one more time, and leave you on the rolling river shores of changes. So sit by my side, come as close as the air, share in a memory of gray, wander in my words, dream about the pictures that I play of changes.
And that was Phil Oakes, Changes, from the album Chords of Fame. And a good album it is. It's about 20 to 12, and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse, or Bathrobes Pier Robert, as I dub myself. You're listening to Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, and we just spent some time talking with Christopher Smith, who's gone, but not forgotten. And I was actually asking the question before he left, what about other cities that have tried these 14-foot forbidden zones and such things? How has that affected the street musicians? And we're going to get into that question, but first we have this call.
Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I was thinking in connection with the ongoing discussion, that one of the resources that what your last guest said about that this is basically a conspiracy, just an action against freedom of expression. You're really talking about art, and and that's clear. And I think we should be using, We should be using more. That we should get the artists together. I was lucky enough to be in Paris at the May Days of 1968, when the students literally rose up and took over the city.
Here, here.
Even had the and all over there were scrawled on the walls, and so on. One of the slogans that was scrawled on the walls was, "Imagination takes over." And it's the most exhilarating slogan I've ever come across. And I think maybe without attacking or doing anything about what actions are already underfoot or underway, we should. I would like to put out a call to be realized in whatever way that the community sees fit. But to put out a call for anybody who wants to come and brainstorm about other methods, other approaches, something that will be a little bit more expressive of the fact that it's the artists that are being attacked, it is freedom that is being attacked. So let's use, instead of kind of moving along, it seems to me, the same old channels that come up against the same old obstacles and the same old dunderheads from the past and so on, we ought to be looking at ways. For instance, one of the things that occurred to me is that we really ought to have a set of rules, a set of ordinances. We should have our own proposal for a set of ordinances, and the premise should be these ordinances don't go nearly far enough. The trouble with these ordinances is not that they're bad, it's that they're just too timid. And that what we really want is something much more repressive, something that will really tie people's hands and feet and mouths and so on, so that there will be much less freedom than these ordinances are willing to allow.
Well, I think as Ed Porter apparently told a candidate, city council candidate Thomas Levitt, a few days ago, when Levitt said, you know, you can't really regulate rudeness downtown, Ed Porter said, you know, in my high school class, I don't allow people to be rude, and we can do exactly the same thing downtown. So perhaps what we need to do is recognize that we are all in a class, and Ed Porter is our teacher.
I think that's a wonderful, you know, it's a wonderful place to start. And then if we could get a group of presumably the creative people that are making Santa Cruz what it is, just get us together, and I'd be willing to offer my place, except that it's tiny and, you know, and not really, but just to brainstorm about this, to see in what direction, just to be completely free.
The place to begin, perhaps, is at the protests tomorrow and Tuesday. Tomorrow at the town clock at 6, and then Tuesday at the town clock at 2, and I guess at 6 we're marching to the Loudoun Nelson Center, where the city council candidates will be mouthing, most of them the same tired or confused or, I should say, disingenuous promises as ever. And then on Tuesday, when the march from 2 o'clock to the city council will have the, you know, an actual, hopefully a kind of a repetition of the very festive celebration we had on July 23rd there at the city council area. So I would, you know, that would be, I think, a place to come and bring that if you can. I don't know. I understand you're sort of a disabled person yourself these days, right?
Well, I'm willing to hustle my, but except that it seems to me that an open air place, you know, what we want to do is think of something that's a little bit more. I mean, it's fine to have people improvising and so on the spur of the moment, and I'm all for that. But it just seems that we ought to be able to get together and sort of work out a plan that
well, maybe you could announce
more development, and probably somewhere under a roof would make sense.
Well, I'm thinking that at, you know, at these at this
really willing to work on something.
Caller, I'm thinking that at these two gatherings, you might be able to find people who would either volunteer their quarters, or you could, you know, maybe announce a venue where people could come to. If you could find that in the group, and you know, there would be a place to a sympathetic audience for you to raise the issue, so that people could volunteer space. You could also bring it to the Downtown for All meeting, which is now meeting every Wednesday at 7 o'clock at Wired Wash Cafe at 146 Laurel Street.
Where? What's
Wired
cafe?
Wash Cafe. Wired Wash Cafe,
Wired
which is which is right next to the Saturn Cafe.
Okay, and that's on Wednesday.
That's on Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Okay, well, I'm happy to give my phone number if anybody wants to get together and sort of.
Sure. You want to give the number on the air there, Har?
What?
You want to give your number on the air? Or?
Sure. Fine. My number is 454-9392. Anybody that wants to see imagination take over, you know, willing to, you know. Think about ways of doing that.
454-9392. And there are other groups, too, interested in this, although I don't know how active they are. The Coalition for a Community Commons, Greg Kindig and Amy Cassandra Brown, Amy Courtney, the same folks who successfully challenged the flags-only Caltran rules, which you know, are still going through the courts. They're interested in a community commons downtown, and we need, I think, a whole different program of, I mean, these anti-homeless, anti-musician gentrification rules are a diversion, in my mind, from what we really need to be looking into. But I think it's good, you know, to address them as we have to, as we had to for the last few months.
Yeah, if we could just think yippee, if we could think, you know, Abby Hoffman and the guerrilla theater and so on of the 60s, whether in Paris or in this country, in fact. I mean, there were so many things. There was a guy that went around, what was his name, Aaron? Remember the guy?
Aaron Kay, the pie man.
I'm not
Aaron Kay, the pie man.
Useful, particularly in this thing. But a guy who went around putting pies in.
Yeah. You didn't hear what I said, caller. Yeah.
Like
we got that.
What?
Yeah, we're not hearing each other. But yeah, Aaron Kay, the pie man, was famous. And actually, I saw him in Los Angeles, at the Democratic Convention. I think he's 350 pounds now, and bigger than life.
He must have been eating some of the pies he couldn't.
It could be. Although I think he had special recipes for special people. Anyway, I think it's a great idea, and I appreciate your idea. And let's see how the crowd responds to it tomorrow. And again, you could also bring it at 4:30 to the Downtown for All Merry Monday celebration, which happens every Monday at 4:30 in front of the Cooper House, where Food Not Bombs feeds, and we watch videos about police abuse and the city council candidates Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt speak.
Where is that?
That's in front of Cooper and Pacific, right across from the Cinema 9 movie theater in downtown Santa Cruz.
Okay.
So maybe we'll see you there, caller.
At 4:30 tomorrow?
At 4:30 tomorrow.
Okay. Because that's a lot for me to keep in mind, as you know.
Sure.
I'm not exactly active.
If anybody misses this, you can always call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And most of this is, in fact, all of this is repeated for you, and you can at your own leisure write it down, provided you have the patience to listen through the long message that's there.
Okay.
Thank you, caller.
Thanks. Thanks, Robert.
So, I was actually going to conclude this sort of analysis of the anti-homeless laws, which actually covers not just Santa Cruz, but other cities. It talks about Tempe, Arizona, and what happened in Tempe after they passed these laws to musicians. In every instance, the writer continues, this sort of street playing has caught me up in the transformation of public space, as the music has remade sidewalks and bridges into stages for performance, entertainment, and shared pleasure. I've watched from behind my guitar as communities of musicians, listeners, and dancers form and fade away, as the very sort of musical and social spontaneity which undermines the legislative rigidity or entertainment guidelines and busts the legal boundaries of entertainment location areas. His permit does afford him some protection, but at a price. We're talking about Tempe's new permit system. His second night playing, two police officers warned him that he would be cited for panhandling if he didn't close his fiddle case while playing. Disgusted, he closed up and went home, but the next day decided to walk down to City Hall and check on the legal requirements. Not surprisingly, he discovered a tangle of bureaucratic obstruction. A city official told him that you need to fill out a form to get a business license. Then he said, we have these designated areas for peddlers and vendors downtown, and here's what's available. He showed me a map and pointed out these areas. He said, you've also got to get permission from every business within a half block radius at least to operate your business, and you've got to make sure that you're not in competition with those businesses, because competition's bad for business. He soon learned that the city bureaucracy was even more tangled than this, as he ran into additional requirements and additional forms requiring obstruction-free sidewalks, liability insurance, and state taxes. Street musicians and other sidewalk habitués maintain a remarkable ability to resolve differences and to set the boundaries of public space sans weapons, sans police officers, sans official entertainment guidelines. For those of you who don't know, sans means without. Cooperating more than competing, buskers look out for one another and negotiate a sort of sonic spacing whereby each is able to play with minimum interruption. This sense of street solidarity, this do-it-yourself auto-policing of the subculture and the space it occupies, emerges not just among street musicians, it flourishes among other street communities as well. We and other street musicians put into practice the anarchist ideal of fluid give-and-take negotiation as a human alternative to the rigidity of rules and pre-planning. Out on the streets, we embrace some other anarchist notions as well: vulnerability, tolerance, respect. This vulnerability breeds not fear, but common courage. It spawns a taste for tolerance, a practical respect for diversity, and ultimately a pleasure in the ambitious, uncertain community of what's to come. In providing at least a fleeting alternative to corporate media culture, buskers' do-it-yourself politics of fun also resists and reshapes the spaces of corporate downtowns and commercial districts. As buskers set up to play and begin to accumulate an audience, they interrupt the usual structures of the street, creating little islands of cultural resistance and sonic inclusion amid the everyday river of isolation, commerce, and consumption. We try to put a little sonic wallpaper, spray a little sonic graffiti, beautify cities increasingly fucked up not by rot, but by redevelopment, by homeless sweeps, corporate homogenization, and gentrification. And this is an article that I got on the net. I think it was sent as an email from Downtown for All. Really interesting, lengthy article. I'm going to read more of it later in this program, which will last for another hour and a half. But I want to use this opportunity to give my latest guest a chance to sound off on some issues that I think he has some particular expertise on, and also that I think we need to know about. Before I do that, however, I want to very briefly point out that there is a memorial this afternoon. I'm going to actually point this out a couple of times for those who may not know. A political activist, Evelyn Schoenfeld, has a memorial Sunday, that's today, September 8th, at the Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright Avenue here in Santa Cruz. She's the 87-year-old woman who died several weeks ago. You may have seen her at City Council on her walker or on double crutches. making her way to the mic to defend the rights of homeless people, going down to Camp Paradise to support Camp Paradise people, coming to the Mumia protests to demand freedom, or at least a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I read this before, I'm going to read it again today, and I encourage people who want to come to this memorial, it's open to everyone to come, and it is at the Pacific Cultural Center today. It says 6 to 9, I think it's actually 5:30 to 9:30, but if you want to be sure, you might come 6 to 9. It's at the intersection of Seabright and Broadway in Santa Cruz, Seabright and Broadway. Wear red. Evelyn said she didn't want people to come to her wake wearing black. It was too gloomy. Wear red and come prepared to have some fun. Evelyn Schoenfeld died August 24, 2002. She was 87 years old, a longtime activist. Evelyn wrote her last two political letters on Sunday, August 18, 2002. The first letter was to Senator Bruce McPherson, urging him to vote against AB 1421, which will allow the forced medication of persons suffering from mental health problems, which, by the way, has passed both houses of the state legislature and is going to the governor for his signature. Call him on Evelyn's behalf and just say no to AB 1421. The last letter she wrote was to Mayor Christopher Crone, commending him for voting against the draconian downtown ordinances. In part, she wrote, "It goes against the character of Santa Cruz to ban bubble blowers, street musicians, political tables, jugglers, frisbees, hacky sackers, clowns, magicians, and homeless people holding signs." She was an Army veteran, achieving the rank of corporal in the WACS, and was awarded an honorable discharge. Evelyn died at her home in the Live Oak area of Santa Cruz, surrounded by friends and cared for by hospice. A former school teacher in Oakland, California, and a one-time actress, Evelyn was active in many causes. She was persecuted for her communist views during the McCarthy era, and she helped organize demonstrations and support groups for the Rosenbergs. Much later, she was also a member of the Santa Cruz Coalition to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners. Her causes included the Black Panthers, Leonard Peltier, Medical Aid for El Salvador, the ACLU, the Nicaraguan Interfaith Committee for Action, the Christic Institute, Opposition to the Death Penalty, MOVE, Prison Labor, Women in Prison, Servicio Internacional para la Paz, Refuse and Resist, and her tireless fight for the rights of poor and homeless people. She was a longtime opponent of the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. Evelyn was a tireless fighter against police brutality and used her home as a collateral to bail Steve Argue out of jail when he was charged for punching a Santa Cruz police officer who was abusing a mother holding a small child. She opposed and publicized the death squads in El Salvador and fought for civil rights. A memorial to celebrate her life is going to be held today from 6 to 9 at the Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright Avenue. Since she always wore red at funerals, it's recommended that people wear red to honor her. For more information, you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Or the Santa Cruz Coalition to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners at 425-4467. You want to send flowers, send them to the Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright, Santa Cruz. Tell the florist to send them after 4 p.m. on Sunday, today. And you can send cards to Jean Solidar, care of Schoenfeld, S-C-H-O-E-N-F-E-L-D, 1721 Foster Court, Santa Cruz, California. And that's a lot of stuff, rather quickly thrown at you, but if you, again, need more details or need them repeated, please leave a message on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff, I remind you, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, concerned with civil rights for poor people. We're also a contact point for other organizations, and that's the purpose here. Huff meets every Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker's Square Restaurant on Ocean Street, in case you want to be a part of Huff or find out what we're all about. That's the same day that Downtown for All has its new meeting time, 7 o'clock at the Wired Wash Cafe. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Lots of stuff happening. We're going to be talking about the City Council next. I'm going to give Scott a chance to warm up here with a few jabs, a right and a left. And while I do, we're going to have a note or two from Phil Oakes.
Is there anybody here who'd like to change his clothes into a uniform? Is there anybody here who thinks they're only serving on a raging storm? Is there anybody here with glory in their eyes, loyal to the end, whose duty is to die? I wanna see him, I wanna wish him love, I wanna share. the medal, I'm the man. Is there anybody here who'd like to wrap the flag around an early grave? Is there anybody here who thinks they're standing taller on a battle wave? Is there anybody here who'd like to do his part? Soldier to the world and a hero to his heart. I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand. Want to call his name. Put a medal on the man. Is there anybody here proud of the parade who'd like to give a cheer and show they're not afraid? I'd like to ask him what he's trying to defend. I'd like to ask him what he thinks he's gonna win. Is there anybody here who thinks that following the orders takes away the blame? Is there anybody here who wouldn't mind a murder by another name? Is there anybody here whose pride is on the line with the honor of the brave and the courage of the blind? I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand. Want to call his name. Put a medal on the man. Is there anybody here so proud of the parade who'd like to give a cheer and show they're not afraid? I'd like to ask him what he's trying to defend. I'd like to ask him what he thinks he's gonna win. Is there anybody here who thinks that following the orders takes away the blame? Is there anybody here who wouldn't mind a murder by another name? Is there anybody here whose pride is on the line with the honor of the brave and the courage of the blind? I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand. Gonna call his name. Put a medal on the man. Put a medal on the man.
Singly important song by Phil Oakes. We see now as the patriotism mania continues to fill the papers around 9/11, and Bush continues to push for his war on Iraq, although there's, you know, increasingly voices that are giving us, oh, it's not the right time, you know, to do the war, or we have to, consider some of the consequences instead of considering why they're considering war at all in the first place, when dictators worse than Saddam Hussein are being funded by U.S. money, and other countries where U.S. troops are actively engaged, like Korea, have obviously probably gotten as far or further in nuclear weapons research than Iraq, aren't being considered for invasion. I mean, it's the discussion is still pretty limited, but we need to raise the issue. I think on the downtown musicians issue, the community has won at the moment. I don't see them passing this stuff on. I see them passing extensions and waiting the issue out until January, and then and changing the law before January. But the real problem, of course, now, well, not the real problem, but I think our challenge, and something we've shown we can do, we've raised the issue of the street musicians effectively. Now we have to raise the issue to show that this is a bad way to deal with poor and homeless people, because that's what it is. And that may involve, well, it will of course involve clarifying that this is clearly targeting homeless people. It has in every other city that it's been tried. It's just monumental hypocrisy and blindness in Santa Cruz. Let's call it summer surfing blindness. I don't know what you want to call it, but call it what it is. That it isn't seen as an anti-homeless law, because that's all it is, really. Primarily, it's a law to expand police power. I have in the studio with me Scott Graham, who is an inveterate council watcher, or used to be. Scott, we haven't seen much of you at city council these last few months. Have you decided to give up on the city council? Your mic is live. Go ahead.
Well, basically, I've come to the point where I feel that the city council is not listening to the public at all. So it became basically fruitless for me to continue to go to meetings and voice my opinion, since I'm not one of the moneyed merchants. They're not going to listen to me, no matter whether they agree with me or disagree with me. It doesn't matter. Their primary goal, it seems, is to keep the money flowing into the city coffers, and to do that, it's necessary for them to kowtow to the moneyed interest of the downtown merchants.
Well, we are in the midst of an election. I mean, I agree with you, of course. I mean, I do. And I don't know why I keep going to the city council meeting, except I'm a glutton for punishment and a rampant exhibitionist who's just, we won't get into the private motivations. But this is the election season, and you have, I guess, 11 candidates or so running for city council. I know a few of them. They're the three bad ones, Matthews, Fitzmaurice, and Rotkin. Then there are the two good ones, Argue and Levitt. Then there's that Phil Baer. What about that Phil Baer, anyway? Any comments on candidate Phil Baer?
Well, it's my understanding, I haven't talked to Phil recently, but it's my understanding that Phil isn't really running to win. What he's doing is he's running to create an issue, which is the heroin dealing in the beach flats and other areas of town, and the devastation is that it's wreaking on our community. There are, the number of heroin addicts is increasing each year, and the violence that is part of the heroin dealing as it now exists, because heroin is illegal and there's a lot of money to be made off of it because it's illegal, the people that are selling heroin vie for the opportunity sites in which to sell it. And this vying for those sites often leads to violence. And it's not only happening here in Santa Cruz, but it happens everywhere where these things happen. It's, Salinas has a overwhelming gang problem where various gangs are vying for turf, and there's shootings and murders there all the time. Here in Santa Cruz, it basically took one of the police's own to get shot for them to get off their duffs and actually start patrolling the beach flats with any regularity. And I don't know if it's actually made any real difference in the amount of heroin available, or if it's just, has basically moved people around and created a little shell game between the police and the heroin dealers. But personally, opiates and opium addiction have been around for centuries, and the fact that it's illegal is what brings all this violence into it, and also makes it much more dangerous for the addicts, because the dealers usually cut what they're selling with something. And in the instance of this so-called black tar heroin from the so-called black tar heroin from Mexico is often cut with shoe polish, and people are not only shooting up this opiate substance, but they're also shooting up shoe polish or any other substances that these dealers cut it with. So to me, legalizing drugs such as heroin would not only take the violence out of the hands of the drug dealers, but it would also make it safer for the people that are using these substances. And the other thing that needs to happen here is that we really need a system of where people that are users, when they come to this epiphany where they decide, okay, I don't want to use anymore, my life is gone, I've hit bottom, I can't deal with this anymore, I need help, to then go to the places that are supposed to help them and be put on a waiting list does not help them, because oftentimes by the time their wait is over, they're no longer at the point where they feel they need help anymore. They've either gone beyond it or they're dead.
Scott, this is sort of an old, I think, sound line of reasoning, which you and I have discussed before, and I think I fundamentally agree with you on it. I guess my question is, what are the ramifications of it locally? How can, in a community, and I'm actually about to kind of expand the topic, because we did reach city council candidate and Beach Flats activist Phil Baer, and he may be calling in once he gets a radio set up. How can we get the local government to do something meaningful around this issue when, of course, the immediate answer is going to be, well, heroin's, you know, federally banned. You know, you can't do anything there. But, of course, so is marijuana, and we have, through, I think, through places like Santa Cruz, which in, what, 1992 or 93 passed, you know, in the county, the decriminalization of medical marijuana, and then in the state in 96, of course, what we see now is feds moving in and busting Valerie Corral and Wham, to the great outrage of all of us, but and the statements of outrage of Marty Wormhout and Fred Keeley and Billy Lockyer and Representative Farr, but we don't see any action from the city council. I mean, I've suggested, for instance, that the city council get together with the board of supervisors and start mandating distribution of medical marijuana on county property. I think they do that it's either San Francisco or Oakland.
Yeah, I believe it's Oakland, where they do it at the city council offices, you know, the rotunda in front of the city council offices.
So, I mean, I don't understand why this isn't on the September 10th agenda as an emergency item. I mean, as an emergency item, they have that they're going to postpone enforcement of the street performers' guidelines. I'm sorry, of the anti-street performer laws that they passed, the 14-foot forbidden zones. But apparently they don't care enough about the fate of 250... medical marijuana users who had their medicine stolen and their leader kidnapped from under their noses by armed men with the collusion of deputies 4 days ago. The deputies stopped the folks on the road from blocking the federal agents. Instead of telling the federal agents, make your own fucking arrests, they moved in and, in essence, either, I'm not sure if they persuaded the people to move or they threatened them, but it was deputies involved in this whole thing. What's your view on that?
Well, it's my understanding that, you know, I don't know what the involvement of the deputies was, but it was my understanding that Valerie talked to some of the people that were blocking the road and told them, listen, you know, they've got us, you know, you blocking us isn't going to end this, so just let them take us. You know, it was basically Valerie's call to say, you know, let them take us out of here and take us to wherever they took us, San Jose or wherever they took them. And so, you know, I mean, I know there was deputies there. I don't really know that much about what the deputies were doing there or, you know, what their role in, you know, backing the play of the DEA was.
Right. Well, my understanding, both from the, I guess it was from the Friday Sentinel, and we have on the phone with us actually somebody who has been involved in a medical marijuana club, attorney Kate Wells. Hi, Kate.
Hi there.
And you yourself have been probably following the accounts of the latest daredevil federal heroes who have come in to save Santa Cruz County from the medical marijuana pushers, right?
Right. Yeah. They must be able to rationalize it in their brains. I don't know. It's pretty bizarre. It's the tip of the iceberg, actually, and that's what's frightening. We always knew that there was a good chance that they would come after high-profile cases, just kind of let that be a lesson to you, kind of Oakland Cannabis Club, the San Francisco clubs.
Los Angeles and Scott Emler.
And Hollywood, yeah. The frightening thing is that the news is that ever since the Mueller decision, it came down from the U.S., I mean, not the California Supreme Court, what they have done is put the burden on the prosecution. You have the patient has to come forward with some documentation to show that he or she is a valid patient, but then the burden is on the prosecution to prove that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since that happened, I guess prosecutors in counties where they are not real marijuana-friendly, like Placer and Shasta, they're turning their marijuana prosecutions over to the feds. And as I understand it, there is at least one case where the feds are prosecuting one patient for growing 6 plants.
And where is this?
I don't know. But I have a good source.
So I guess, you know, I mean, we were all shocked, and although perhaps not shocked but not surprised at the federal kidnapping of Valerie and Mike Corral, and then the theft by these armed thugs of medicine of 250 patients of WAM. I, on the other hand, have been quite critical of WAM in the last couple of years for its failure to support a broader, even medical marijuana movement. And you've talked a little bit about how your club was not able to survive, even though you served 3 times as many people, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the one thing I think is most important about the movement is that we stay unified. Obviously, this is a, you know, typical tactic for the government to divide and conquer. And there was a time when there wasn't exactly what you would call good support from other organizations, but that's in the past, and in the future, I hope we can all stick together.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very sweet of you, Kate. I always like to get the history clear, though, because
yeah.
Often history, not always, but is often a guide to the future. I mean, I wanted to get that point clear, and we haven't really gone into it, and it sounds like you don't really want to go into it at great length, given the crisis which even now Valerie Corral, the favored poster child marijuana provider, the Mother Jones, Mother Teresa of the medical marijuana movement, has herself been, you know, handcuffed and hauled away and told, in essence, we're busting your shit. Although I guess it could be one of those symbolic busts where they're coming in making a little high-profile hay for the media, and then leaving her alone. What's your feeling about that?
Well, you know, in view of their success in prosecuting other high profiles such as B.E. Smith up in Shasta County, you know, I think they may just go ahead and prosecute. I think otherwise they're going to be you know, kind of left hanging out there as, you know, well, why did you do this if you're not going to prosecute? The hang-up before was they weren't going after people such as Valerie because they were afraid of the jury's response. The problem that the reason they're feeling more secure now, and the problem is that in the B.E. Smith trial, for instance, Judge Burrell, federal judge in the Eastern District of Sacramento, forbid even the mention of medical purposes in his criminal trial.
And recently in Sacramento, perhaps the same federal judge forbade a necessity defense in another medical marijuana trial.
Right.
That was a trial where actually not only was the necessity defense tried, but the people were arrested for flyering the community, including the jury, about their right to jury nullified, to just say no to you know, the judge and just say not guilty anyway.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I guess we've been kind of complacent here in Santa Cruz because, you know, it's a user-friendly environment with the local authorities. The problem is that this has been ongoing in other counties. Again, you know, there's kind of a lack of a united effort.
What about the proposal? I was just saying this. We got Scott Graham in the studio, too. I don't know if you're probably not listening to your radio, right?
No.
But Scott, I was proposing to him, we're looking at the city council races, and I was proposing that the city and the county do what apparently Oakland has done, which is provide marijuana itself, to have suddenly pass emergency laws that say, well, since the feds are openly violating state law and, you know, wreaking havoc on vulnerable, dying people. We're going to take up the cudgels here and, you know, provide medical marijuana.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see him show some balls. You know, I really would. I don't know if they, you know, if they got it in them. But I mean, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors proposed that they grow their marijuana on public land. That would be an interesting confrontation between the feds and the county government.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to challenge the city council to take some kind of radical action like that. There's lots of land sitting around that where they could grow.
Well, what about demanding that the sheriff's office stop colluding with these DEA authorities as they come in? In essence, newspaper accounts that I've read so far lead me to believe that while first we heard this, oh gosh, ah gee, we didn't know, that the second accounts read that the sheriffs were instrumental after Valerie had calmed everybody down, saying, you know, go back to your houses where, you know, everything is okay or you can't do anything. They had blocked the road to stop the DEA from leaving, and the sheriff's deputies, they called the DEA called the sheriffs and got the sheriffs to move people off the roads. And do we have any kind of way of, I was suggesting on Friday when the protesters were having a rally in front of the county building and going up to all the closed offices of Farr and Keeley and the Board of Supervisors where nobody was around, and go instead to Sheriff Tracy's office and demand he do something to support our laws and our community and our sick people, and instruct his deputies not to collude with these kinds of state deals, and maybe start denying grants. No longer accepting money of this sort from the feds.
Well, you know, in my mind, what's going on, and I've been stating this for a long time, nobody has paid much attention to it, but I think, it's clearly treasonous. All of these individuals have taken an oath to uphold the California Constitution. This is a valid law passed by the people, and our California Constitution specifically states that a state officer, which includes Mark Tracy, which includes Bill Lockyer, which includes all of our state officials, they are bound to support and uphold the laws, especially any law passed by initiative such as this, until and unless it's been declared unconstitutional, which our law has not. So they have sworn an oath to uphold this law, and here they turn around and like I said, what's happening here in Santa Cruz is not nearly so blatant as in other counties, where they're just handing these people over to the feds.
I know that when we spoke yesterday, Kate, and you agreed to come on this show, even though you do have a number of medical problems which have required you to kind of withdraw from a lot of your practice, you also mentioned there were some really serious concerns that had sort of gutted the rights of, they gutted your practice to some extent because you defend people who are challenging the police, trying to get civil settlements for police violence and police abuse. What has happened in that, along those lines?
Well, it's all Fourth Amendment that is basically been totally eroded. The two main parts of my practice were excessive force cases and false arrest cases. And two cases have come down that have virtually gutted my ability to go after cops who do this sort of thing. The first one is one that I think we've talked about before, but I'll run through it real quick, is the case in Texas where they arrested the woman for a seatbelt violation, and it was undisputed that was the only offense that she had committed. Now, seatbelt violation in Texas, as well as here and anywhere else, is only punishable by a fine.
But it's also a misdemeanor in Texas, as I understand it, not just an infraction.
But a misdemeanor is a different thing in Texas than it is here.
Gotcha.
And so it's basically the same as an infraction here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did arrest her even though it's only punishable, even if she's found guilty, it was only punishable by a fine. So that's the qualifying factor, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So she paid her fine and turned around and sued them for false arrest. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said basically that was okay, that he was entitled to immunity from any kind of prosecution because that was all right for him to arrest her.
Did he injure her in the course of this arrest? Or?
No. This did not involve any kind of excessive force, but it did, you know, just the false arrest part of the...
humiliated her in front of her children.
Well, you know, the whole case was absolutely ridiculous, you know. But at any rate, that kind of gutted... I've been telling people that that basically what that case says is that you can be arrested for jaywalking if a cop decides he doesn't like how you're talking to him or you know, what else, who knows.
Resisting arrest.
And of course what goes along with being arrested, you know, just the arrest itself isn't that horrendous, but what goes along with the arrest is of course a full search, booking, all of the other things attendant to an arrest. So that was the first nail, well, not the first nail in the coffin, but a large... it was an animal rights protester who was at a Gore speech at the Presidio, and this guy went to unfurl a flag, and I guess a cop jumped on him, and I think they broke his leg, and you know, did some other things to him. Now, in this actual scenario, it is undisputed that this guy did not resist them in any manner. I guess they still did this to him. So he sued for excessive force.
Mm-hmm.
The district court dismissed the case. It's the lowest level. That's the trial court dismissed the case, saying that the cops were entitled to qualified immunity. In other words, they weren't responsible for their actions. So went up to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit said, well, of course, this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment right. You know, this is clearly excessive force. He didn't resist any manner. They broke his leg, for heaven's sake. So, of course, the prosecution, knowing that they have a Supreme Court that's pretty much willing to overturn any kind of Ninth Circuit decision, they took it to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no, this is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment, because the cops, even though he didn't resist, they had reason to believe he might resist.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Now, does that give us some standard to go by in the future? Well,
the might resist standard.
Right, the might resist standard, you know. I mean, a cop can say that about any situation. So there we have it. The two main parts of the Fourth Amendment that affect the vast majority of the people are basically gutted.
Wow. We're talking with Kate Wells, attorney at law, who's thinking of taking up... kind of horse tending or pole vaulting. What are you thinking of doing as an alternate career?
Well, actually, what I'm going to be doing here is I have to withdraw from my practice for health reasons. I'm not going to let my knowledge of this area of the law go to waste, and I'm hoping to write a book on to arm the people to get to, so that people will be able to bring these actions themselves. The more we arm the people with the knowledge of how to do that, I tell you, I get calls probably at least 5 or 6 calls a week from all over the state from people who have been beat up, falsely arrested. I think it's, you know, if I were an anthropologist, I would say that it is a really interesting sign of the time that they are now advertising on TV bail bonds. Now, this never happened before, and to me, it's a sign that the middle class is now concerned about getting arrested.
Now, are you getting more calls than you were, say, 10 years ago, or?
Well, yeah, but that's not a gauge, I don't think, because I probably went more well-known at this point all over the state because I had so many cases.
How successful are you, or have you been in your practice? Now, what percentage of cases do you think you win?
Well, winning is a really relative term. I would say that when I feel like I get a good settlement, I think that's a win. I would say that, that's such a hard one. Probably 70% I get at least a settlement for the client. But it's an uphill battle.
Now, we actually earlier, I got on the line Phil Baer, who's running for city council, and Phil is concerned, this is another issue, but one that's rather important, the drug war plays a large part in what many of us regard as the destruction of our basic civil rights and civil liberties here at home. On the other hand, for people like Phil, who live in the beach flats and who see cocaine and heroin dealing on the streets outside his house, he gets into a position where, in spite of his 60s sensibilities, he wants to be able to do something about this. He feels the city is essentially ignoring a section of the city and allowing the drug dealers free rein. What can be our response as a community to dealing with problems of hard drugs and yet still retain some, or regain and restore some civil liberties in our society?
Well, if you ask me, what you do is legalize drugs. And it's been shown that in the countries that have decriminalized drugs, that, of course, drug crime goes down. There's no profit motive. Register as a heroin addict, and they give you the heroin, and it's people are dying of overdoses, and my phone is going out on
me. Oh, dear.
I'm sorry.
your phone is having a heroin overdose.
It's cutting out on me. My battery's been going out, so I'm sorry. I think it has to start at a much more basic level than just the local level.
Thank you, Kate Wells, and good luck with your new career as an internet writer.
Thank you.
And phone lines are open here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm the broad Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Norse. You are hopefully going to call in. We now have an incoming call, and who knows who that can be.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Andrea at the Compassion Flower Inn.
Oh, hi, Andrea. You, of course, are the proud owner of one of those illegal marijuana places, but not even a medical marijuana place. It is medical marijuana friendly.
That's right.
But are you recreational marijuana friendly? I guess we don't talk about that.
No, we actually say that medical marijuana patients who have legitimate doctor's recommendations can use their cannabis here at the inn.
Mm-hmm.
And with respect to that question that came up about the DEA agents destroying a six-plant patient garden,
mm-hmm.
that belonged to Diane Monson of Oroville, and the DEA defied openly a Butte County district supervisor, a district attorney, to leave the plants alone, and a six-plant patient garden was destroyed, and that, in fact, is the truth.
Mm.
And they have been doing this all over Northern California now for the entire summer. And there's many more cases that are now up, many more medical marijuana cases that are being, many more medical marijuana patients are being busted here in Northern California. It's the DEA that's doing this kind of thing.
What is the motivation, you think, at this time? Is it some sort of political flexing of the muscles inside the DEA? Is that something to do with the elections? Is there some other? What do you think?
Well, it's what we were kind of anticipating, early in the spring, that the DEA was going to finally get around to taking care of these marijuana terrorists, because they are linking clearly this kind of the new bill. What is it called? The freedom, Homeland Security,
mm-hmm.
Thing is like now the medical marijuana patients, the sick and dying people, are included in that. And they're like kind of overlapping and trying to skew the whole lines of like what is a terrorist, and they're like it's coming over into the marijuana arena as well.
Well, it sounds like the DEA terrorists don't like people kind of muscling into their terrorist territory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What, however, can we locally do other than write nasty letters to? I mean, I was very kind of dismayed to see this. Oh, write a letter to Senator Boxer, write a letter to Senator Feinstein, go over the hill to San Jose and have a little demonstration at the DEA and then go home. What about the local politicians who should be distributing the marijuana and to the people who have just been have just had their medicine ripped off by these federal thieves?
Well, we think that from what has happened in the last few days up there at the Wham Garden, I was up there about an hour after the DEA left, and they just they took chainsaws and cut down 138 plants. And the patients up there that had worked so hard on the gardens and like this, I mean, you can imagine it was a very somber feeling up there. That this is just incredible, and I think it's time for our board of supervisors, the city council. I agree completely with you that we need to declare a medical marijuana emergency in this county, because now we have another 250 patients that don't have their medicine, along with the 2,000 to 3,000 patients already that don't have their medicine and have to go to the streets to find it. Either we have to do what San Francisco's doing in the respect of passing an initiative that's going to be on the ballot in November, mandating the city to have marijuana gardens and become involved in growing the cannabis, or they in some way have to assist these people who need the medicine so badly in order to live. And I don't know exactly what form that's going to take, but I think that the city council and the board of supervisors need to get on it right away.
Well, maybe what they can do is all those felony busts of small marijuana dealers downtown on Pacific Avenue, they can confiscate their stash and turn it over to the medical marijuana. I'm being facetious.
Well, I'm afraid that's not going to be enough.
Right,
like
no.
This. And I think that
and what I'm saying here is that their priorities, to me, that this is the problem. It seems to me that there is a real drug war mentality, an unregenerate drug war mentality, in spite of the nice statements that roll out of Mark Tracy's office and the supposedly marijuana-friendly approach of the city towards certain select marijuana folks. I mean, you got a permit and Valerie got a permit, but the larger organization was driven out. Mm-hmm. And so the great majority of people in this town, there was no medical marijuana emergency declared 3 years ago that would have allowed for, it was Kate Wells, and I guess somebody else was working on that club. And what can we do now I guess we could ask the supervisors to, on Tuesday, pass an emergency law that, immediately establishes some kind of emergency relief for those 250 people. And I presume, and would hope for other people that are also have, legitimate medical marijuana credentials and are being forced to, violate the going to the levee after dark law.
We have been supporting the people in the medical marijuana community, aside from the WHAM organization, the need for guidelines for the sheriff and law enforcement for when they come upon a garden. And this is going to become even more necessary now in this environment when now it looks like everybody's going to have to go underground, and we're not going to be able to grow like this for large numbers of people, because the DEA is going to find out about it, and they're going to come in again, and they're going to do the same thing they did to Valerie. So in light of that, what we need are guidelines for the sheriff and law enforcement like this to a specific number of plants or an area where plants, they can be so many plants grown in a specific area. We need to do that. 12 counties in California have voted in ordinances which regulate the sheriff and law enforcement from this.
And has that been successful in stopping DEA intervention in those counties?
Well, the DEA, they say they're the trump card. They are the ones that supersede anything that the state and county decides. The DEA can do anything. However, when you have small gardens and people are growing individually or in very, very small groups of people, it's more difficult for the DEA to come in, and they're not as interested. They're interested in these big gardens, such as Valerie had, or busting the L.A. Club mm-hmm. down there with Scott Imler. They're not going to probably go after the small growers. However, this year they have been going after, for example, this six-plant patient garden up in Butte County. This is frightening. This is a frightening new trend. But I think that the counties' governments and the city governments really need to come online here now and say, look, we definitely oppose the federal intervention here, and we're going to make this a medical marijuana sanctuary. We are going to endorse legislation to grow cannabis for the patients and distribute it through the government sources. We are going to pass guidelines which allow individual patients to grow a certain number of plants or in a certain area. We are going to do whatever it takes in order to not have this happen again. This was a travesty.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these patients, it's like signing their death warrant. I mean, these DEA agents have the lives of these patients of WHAM on their heads right now.
Mm.
Because many of these people are terminal. The only way that you can get into the WHAM organization is if somebody has died, and there are a lot of people there that are close to that already. You know, AIDS and cancer. These are seriously ill people,
mm-hmm.
and what they've done there is like has crossed the line of acceptability. This shows like just exactly what this federal government is about.
But what can we do about our local government? Because the federal government, I agree, we need to get rid of the not just the bad interchangeable Democrats and Republicans at the top, frankly, but we need the whole monstrous apparatus, which is bureaucratically self-motivating and moving its way forward. But locally, we were able through, you know, passing Proposition, the 215,
mm-hmm.
and through earlier our county proposition to do something. Why can't we do something similar? And are you going to be at the next Board of Supervisors meeting?
No, I'm going to be at the City Council and the Board of Supervisors meetings. And also, there's a candidates forum at the Loudoun Nelson
Monday.
Monday.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Yeah, it's for Green Party candidates and SCAN members. But
SEIU and a couple of other people, too.
Okay. I've been a Green Party member for the last 15 years, and we're going to be sponsoring a reception for Peter Camejo.
Mm-hmm.
On October the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the inn, and we support Green Card Party candidates for governor who will definitely will work with medical marijuana in the state and support medical marijuana and decriminalization of marijuana. Even I mean, we need to go beyond just medical marijuana. Ultimately, we have to go to legalization.
Now, what should be done immediately? Okay, have you got a phone number? Are you like a point person for this? Are you a person that can be called who would like to, if people want to get behind a movement to the supervisors and the city council to take action, not in 2 weeks, not in 4 weeks, not in 4 months, but take emergency action, preferably on Tuesday, to get
mm-hmm.
something rolling? Are you a person to do this, or do you have a number?
Well, sure. And our number here at the end is 466-0420.
466-0420, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. We've been talking to Andrea Tischler, who has not only got some compassion, but also got some rage, it sounds like, at this latest activity.
Well, this is something to be outraged about, and I think the general public, even people who are not medical marijuana patients, should realize that they're going after the sick people, but they'll be going after other people as well as a result of this Homeland Security and everything, which they're going to, you know, tap our phone lines and our email, and they're going to do just anything that they have to. Anybody who at all questionable, what the president said, our selected president, said if you're either for us or against us, and, how can anybody, like, this goes beyond the pale of acceptability, totally.
Hail to the thief. I guess the other question I have for you, and this is sort of along the lines of what we were talking about before here, which has to do with heroin and hard drugs. We asked Kate Wells, we have in the studio Scott Graham, and we're hoping to get on the line Phil Baer, what to do around the issue of the drug war locally with hard drugs. It's often a harder choice to make, but both Kate and Scott said legalization there and medicalization is the answer. What's your response?
I would say also, I mean, I agree completely with the legalization. You know, the model has been established in Europe, in Switzerland, and now more in Germany, where they have these little places where people go, and the government supplies the heroin, and the people have a safe place in which to take their drug with clean needles, and people have been shown that they have been able to actually function as fairly normal people. I think that this whole thing about heroin has to do with from morality issues that people think, oh gosh, it's just terrible, and these people have been pushed down. down, who are doing that. I don't support. People. I don't encourage people to take heroin because I think it's an addictive drug, and I think marijuana is a good alternative to taking heroin. Many people is a harm reduction drug. But right now we have the problem as it currently exists. We should look at it as a medical problem, not a criminal problem, it's against the federal government. But I think that we need to do everything we can in order to be able to.
We already have needle exchange locally, but let me ask you this: I know candidate Phil Baer in the Beach Flats is concerned. I mean, he's an old time '60s. Fellow, but he lives in the Beach Flats, and he's concerned about the heroin epidemic going on there, and the crime that happens in front of his house that stems from that, like shootings and mm-hmm. I guess disease and illness and the corruption of minors and right. creation of an unsafe environment. So what can we do? We're kind of stuck in a situation. What do you call in the police? What's the answer locally while we're waiting for these idiots at the federal level to do something?
I think what we need to do is declare an emergency and create a task force of people from all sides to get together, health officials, people from the community who live in the neighborhood, police, and people who are actually probably the addicts themselves, and come to some kind of come together in a group and talk about this.
Not just a bunch of retired police officials who want to get more money for their drug war campaigns.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that this is something that it's been always a problem, but it's gotten worse this summer. And of course, it's greatly hyped up by the press as well. They make it Metro. Article that was a few weeks ago that said
bullshit.
It gave the idea that half the children in this town are taking black tar heroin,
mm-hmm.
and I just don't believe that. I really don't believe that. I have a 14-year-old daughter myself. She goes to the teen center all the time, like this. And I asked her. I said, "Well, what's going on? With the teens, first year in high school. She's not, doesn't even know what's happening out there." And so I think it is a big hyped up thing. But I think that it's something that we need to bring a lot of people, together on, and we need to declare an emergency on this thing. We have to really get off of our, the city council and the board of supervisors. They are just so weak, and they have no effectiveness whatsoever. They just play to whatever the pressure group is this week, whether it's the merchants or whether it's the homeless contingent or whether it's whatever it is. They just play to everybody. They pander to everybody, and they actually do nothing.
You got it.
Yeah,
I wish they pandered to the homeless rather than the anti-homeless group, but they don't. But we're talking with Andrea Tischler. You're interested apparently in talking to people of like mind who want to organize some kind of real alternatives around this issue.
I just would be one of the people that would be involved because I'm concerned about it for our city and county and for the people that live in it. I think that we should all have a good quality of life, and we should be able to live freely and not fear the police, arresting us. The DEA could come tomorrow to the inn and say, you support medical marijuana, and, you're out of business.
And you're under arrest, too.
And you're under arrest.
Confiscate your property. Forfeiture stuff is happening.
Right.
Your phone number is 466-0420. People want to get together with you to see what can be done locally, and I'm quite encouraged to hear you because I haven't heard this kind of talk from anybody else in a, shall we say, a position of some credibility. I really appreciate your putting things the way you do, Andrea.
Well, I'm just a merchant downtown. Let's put it that way.
Well, just don't
and
sit
I
down near your building.
I support the homeless cause, and I think that we really haven't been addressing that as well.
Damn right. Right. Well, I wish there were more merchants like you downtown, Andrea. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open here at Free Radio, 427-3772. Reminding you again, from 6 to 9 tonight is the memorial for Evelyn Schoenfeld, and that's going to be at Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright Avenue, Seabright and Broadway. We're talking about a number of issues here on Free Radio, Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides, talking about ways of dealing with the police abuse crisis, in this case the federal police, and of course the drug crisis too.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is the poster child here.
Oh, good. It's about time.
Well, it was a surprise to me to find myself on the front page of the paper. I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised, but under the context, I was. In actuality, I'm not a WAM member, nor am I an official caregiver, but I do consider myself a caregiver. Mm-hmm. And that was explained to the photographer, actually. So,
maybe you can tell us, audience, caller, who you are. Tell the audience.
Oh, I'm, it was a Sentinel yesterday, I believe it was, and there was a picture on the front of two women consoling one another. That was me and Susan Durst, and Susan is a cancer survivor and is a member and an activist in WAM, mm-hmm. and a very courageous person as mm-hmm. well. I was there because, like Andrea and many more in the community, and I felt, and my cat was dying, and actually that's when he snapped the picture. I just told my friend my cat was dying, so the joke there is you can't always tell what a picture's saying, you know. Hmm. But I agree with Kate. I agree with Andrea. I agree with you. I mean, there's so many points where I think that we're all coming together, and one is that if we don't now all come together, and I want to go back to what you said about having, let's say, serious considerations about early when WAM began, that there was not more of a united effort to decriminalize or legalize marijuana. Mm-hmm. But having said that, it seemed to me that I had to make a choice in supporting the fact that some people who are suffering, and I mean really, really suffering, do get benefit from this cannabis as a medicine. I'm angry because I cannot understand how anyone within the DEA would have, I mean, the balls to just say that there is no medicinal value. I mean, I know there are studies. I know that they're suppressed, but I know they're out there. And, I mean, even if you're going to go with glaucoma, I mean, I've had a friend who would be blind by now, and she has been to every specialist, and her whole family has you know, had a series of, well, was born with blindness. And so she was, you know, that was her path.
No, I don't think we can kind of second-guess the weird mentalities of people in the DEA. I mean, it reminds me, as I hear Gordon Liddy, and of sort of figures in the Nazi party or something. And it's people who've adopted a certain mindset. And I don't know how to fathom them. But what's more important to me is fathoming the linguine spines of local politicians and police.
Well, I think it's all, I beg to differ a little bit here, Robert.
Sure.
Because I think it's all part and parcel of the woven fabric of, I want to say, really psychologically, it's fear, mm-hmm. and fear and of losing control. And I think one of the best documentaries I saw was on Sunday, I think Cron has it, and I hope they repeat it, was I think it was the 60s in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and where they used a lot of original footage, of course, and some of it I don't think has been seen before, because I think they had to do some real digging to get some of these scenes. But it's to me, now that this is just my take, after seeing that, it revisits, and you hear this so often from commentaries, you know, they say, oh, well, the 60s were the beginning of the downfall of our morality, blah, 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 blah. But that, when in fact, if you see that document, and of course, I wasn't here, I was in Washington, D.C. trying to raise two kids, so I didn't get to be the love child, flower child, any of that. But what you see is a coming together of people, and they could not be controlled. They couldn't be controlled. And so this all reminds authorities of that same kind of, I think, fear that we're just going to lose control here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that takes different forms, of course, and that goes into morality, and it goes into, you know, they think, tie it into terrorism, which is it's ludicrous. I mean, to me, it's ludicrous anyway. So, I want to go back to the point, and I know that you're great on trying to pull people back to the issue. Mm-hmm. But whether it's homelessness, whether it's the downtown ordinances that are going on, the issue still is about somebody losing something. And people who have different values have come to a point in their spiritual life and awareness who can say, I have to participate. I was there because I felt I didn't know what to say, but I knew that I had to put my body there and make a statement and join these people.
And when you went up to resist the to resist the DEA people.
Well, no, I never get out of few miles from my home, but I mean, I went to the courthouse.
Right. Well, again, my concern hearing from an on-the-spot reporter was that that you all marched to the closed offices, but then didn't want to go to the sheriff's office or the one office that was open, Bruce McPherson. I mean, in other words, it would seem to me that if there's time for civil disobedience at any time, it would be against these local authorities.
I agree.
You know?
I certainly agree. Unfortunately for me, my cat really is in the process
right.
of dying, and I didn't want to be away if that happened, so I left relatively early before.
Yeah, it's not you. Any individual who makes decisions there has to make them based on her life. But maybe people are floundering, looking for a way to go. And I think that you know, people do have to search a bit and before they find it. And I think that to some extent, we have turned back a part one of the downtown ordinances. Now there's parts 2, 3, 4, and 5 to turn back, and that's the danger is going to be that the folks are going to go home saying, oh, we've got the street musicians, somewhat at least left alone for the next 3 months, assuming they pass this stuff on Tuesday, and then don't institute it in January.
I understand. Selective.
Right. But, I mean, they're going after people with backpacks, hacky sackers, skate, and more important than that, and for anybody sitting down within 14 feet of a building or asking peacefully or having a sign, for God's sake, that says spare change. They're deputizing hosts to go around and perform a more repressive role. And that all has to be turned back. And I guess I'm hoping that the city council candidates, only two of them have come out against the downtown ordinances. Nobody, I think Steve Argue and possibly Thomas Levitt have come out for declaring a medical marijuana emergency even before this DEA stuff hit. So I think we need and to do the kinds of things you and Andrea and the folks who went to that protest the other day and indeed hopefully Valerie and others will start to do is stand up in a united front here, not just for the 250 favored patients of WAM, who, as we can see, are no longer so favored. You know that.
Well, that's true, and all of us, I think, just about all of us who are not of the upper echelon of wealth and power, all struggle with what we can do in our own way. And obviously, it does no good to blame people for not doing enough or why aren't you doing that? We can do that, but I don't think that's very constructive. Mm-hmm. So whatever moves a person's soul, spirit, awareness to get involved, and then you look around and you go, my God, this has to do with the same thing, and it is trying to control people and their creativity. Ways to express themselves that gives contrary messages to what, shall we say, for lack of a better way, the right-wing fundamentalist mindset has been dictating.
Right, more than that, we have the liberal fascist mindset in Santa Cruz. It's not so much the fundamentalists don't control the town. It's the Marty Wormhouts and the so-called progressives who have, in essence, been in control of Santa Cruz for 25 years, but have done nothing to do things like end the sleeping ban, institute rent control, provide for a real end to the drug war. I mean, I suppose there have been some moves in terms of the medical marijuana areas, and that's good, but that didn't actually come from people like Marty Wormhout originally. It came from other activists who, were willing to take risks and weren't going to have to, worry about the political accountability. Caller, I thank you for calling in.
You're welcome, Robert.
And please keep up the struggle. And I again encourage people who are interested in getting this stuff on the agenda for Tuesday as an emergency item, either at the City Council or at the Board of Supervisors, to give a call to Andrea at 466-0420. Maybe she can direct you in the right direction.
Okay, and one other quick thing.
Sure.
If this is on a personal level, but anybody out there that can send good thoughts or who does believe in prayer and its purest form. Will you please send good thoughts to Smokey Boss? He's my companion of 12 years, and if he's to be around, I sure would love him to be around.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Cats are people, too. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Got about a half an hour left in the show. It's your chance to call in if you want to give your thoughts on these issues. Scott Graham has had to leave due to getting a little bit sidetracked on this issue of the drug war and the failure of the city to, the failure of the city politicians and city police to effectively resist, and the need, not so much to blame, but to unite so that we can essentially do what we need to do to protect people who are sick, do what we need to do to protect people who are engaging in innocent behavior, whether it's smoking a joint or sitting down downtown or playing an instrument or trying to sleep at night. I mean, these are sort of the basic issues that are so far being addressed only by two candidates in this case, in this race. Steve Argue, whose phone number for those who want to get his campaign is 457-9754. Extension 1169, 457-9754, extension 1169, and Thomas Levitt, whose phone number is 425-3646, 425-3646. All numbers on the show, pretty much you can reach by, if you've forgotten them, by calling the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And reminding you again that tomorrow there's going to be a protest. 4:30, we have our Merry Mondays protest, food supplied by Food Not Bombs, videos supplied by numerous video artists about weird police activity downtown and the crisis locally. That'll be an on-the-street video showing, as well as a candidate debate between the aforementioned Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt. And then at 6 o'clock, there is a town clock rally against the downtown ordinances and march to the Loudon Nelson Center at Center and Laurel Streets, where the SCAN and other organizations will be supporting a debate by the council candidates and then a vote on who to endorse. Tuesday morning, there is an arraignment of activist Becky Johnson for vandalism. Becky is accused of vandalism for writing on the gutter next to the sidewalk at the corner of Cooper and Pacific in erasable chalk, a statement to the effect of how cruel a city it is in Santa Cruz where you can't sleep, can't cover up with blanket at night, can't hold up a sign that says help, and it asks three council members, Riley, Porter, and Fitzmaurice, where are your hearts in this? And for that, Parks and Rec employee had her taken to jail for vandalism, held on a $1,000 bail. And she now goes to arraignment. She faces up to 6 months or possibly a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And that's going to be happening at 8:15 on Tuesday morning, day after tomorrow, downtown in the courts. So you might want to check that out. That's just an arraignment. But, hey, she's inviting people to come if you want to come, if you have time that day.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Personally, I think they should let go. They should let a child murderer out of jail just so they can bring her in there. That criminal offense.
Yeah.
They should definitely let a real child killing criminal out just to make a bed for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I stand on the issue.
Well, thank you.
And if you don't like it, well, you can take it to wash.
Yes, sir.
That's, of course, the other option is building more jails, and that's, of course, being merrily pursued. I saw this very frightening statistic that 10 years ago there were three times as many African-Americans in college as there were in jail, whereas this year there are 200,000 more African-Americans in jail than there are in college, which shows you either that there's just a massive crime wave among African-Americans or that there's a form of selective harassment and arrest and conviction of African-Americans by eager police departments and district attorneys that are using all kinds of new jails for that purpose. Or possibly some third explanation, which I haven't thought of. If you've got explanations, you can give us a call at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Well, I go on trial, as I mentioned, in 3 weeks on September 27th. Then I guess That's going to be for my blocking the sidewalk in front of Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe and trying to raise the issue of boycotting those businesses and New Leaf Market, which I still recommend, by the way, because they are supporting the privatization of the sidewalk, because they are supporting a gentrification process that really removes a class of people from the downtown. And you say, oh, well, you know, only from in front of New Leaf. I haven't heard of any of these groups coming out against the downtown ordinances. No, the downtown ordinances are something that apparently they don't want to speak against, or haven't so far, and therefore you have to say that it's part of a broader plan or a broader consensus among some merchants that it's okay to remove a class of people from the downtown. And so those who said, oh, gee, sweet Alibaba, how could he do such a thing? And I've known people who have a lot of friendly relations with Ali. I mean, I'm friendly with Ali myself. I chat with him. He's not a bad human being, you know. He's just a fellow with a very territorial sense who uses the law to enforce his own sense of control and power over territory that he really has no business having control and power over, the public area around his kiosk, where he is one of many people using that public space, but he gets a favored position. And by the way, there's actually something on the agenda. A lot of stuff is coming up on the agenda on Tuesday. Maybe I can turn to that now, although I'm a little bit kind of behind the times, and I apologize for that, as usual, running late. It's a long agenda because this is the first city council meeting since July 24th. And this is the reason that they rushed forward to do all that nasty stuff, passing these anti-homeless ordinances. 4 city council meetings in 15 days, quite a record, actually, kind of an infamous record. And they have a lot on their agenda now, which I'm scrambling to find. I wasn't able, actually, to get the agenda from the city clerk's office, but I did get it off the internet, and so I'm probably going to have to go back to the internet to get it, and while I do that, I will take this call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes.
This is Al Haig. I'm in control here. I'm taking over.
Go ahead, Al. You're in control.
Hey, what time does that trial start?
The trial, there are actually a number of trials. The trial,
okay, your trial.
My trial won't start for another 3 weeks.
Right, but what time?
Oh,
the 27th?
It's probably going to be on the 27th. That I think it's at 10, but it might be at 1:30, and I will be giving you the time as the date approaches.
Okay.
There are some trials that do start this Friday, Friday the 13th, and those are Becky Johnson and Tim Rinker's chalking trial. I mentioned the vandalism charge, but a lesser charge was filed against Becky and Tim for chalking on the sidewalk, and that is going into, it's at 1:30 on Friday the 13th this week.
Okay.
And I'll be reannouncing that on Thursday in my show between 6 and 8.
Okay.
And I think your trial is a week from Wednesday, isn't it?
It's been, to the 20th.
And you, of course, are not Al Haig. You are the notorious.
In my mind, I'm Al Haig. I'm in charge here. I'm taking over.
Well, in your mind, you may be. But in reality, you are nothing less than the vicious Ed, the vehicle dweller, who is challenging and causing problems throughout the city through insisting on your right to sleep in your legally parked vehicle. Now, what's your problem?
Well, it's illegal in Upside Down World, I'll have you know.
No, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. And hopefully one of these days we'll be able to drive you and your ilk out of town. But until then, I guess...
I got good ilk, though, man.
Yes. Well, I know that Chris Fredrickson, the attorney, is taking your case.
She's
and
good ilk.
She is good. And she's trying
damn
to...
Damn good.
Damn right. And she's trying to use the necessity defense to claim that, I guess, that you don't have a legal place to go other than your vehicle. You have to sleep at night, and so... Go ahead.
In Upside Down World, I wish her luck.
Yes. Well, we're going to see what happens. That trial.
It's a bizarre world, baby.
Yeah. Well, apparently so. But I guess that's going to be on the 20th. Is your trial? And whose court is that in? Do you know?
Joseph, I believe.
Ah, yes.
I'm not certain.
That's Department
Chris
One.
Chris knows all that.
And what time is that?
I don't know. Chris knows that.
It's probably 10 or 1:30. We'll be giving more information on that next week as we get closer to the trial date. So any other news for us, Ed, before we...
No news other than it was a sad thing to hear about the Wham thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but then again, I kind of think, I hear people calling in today, and I kind of think, I recall back to what Stan Monteith says, Nobody cares until their ox is gored. Evidently, that's an age-old saying, right? It's something with that human nature. We don't care what's happened to the little guy next door, whether he or she is homeless or the downtrodden. It's not happening to us, therefore, we can't get involved.
That's frequently the case.
About that. You know, a little bit of knowledge, behold, like, you fuck with one of us, you're fucking with all of us. You know, they had a different saying than that. But my kind of ilk used profanity.
And your ilk does. Well, thank you.
You know what? I'm proud of it. Okay. Thank you, Robert.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'd like some more of that ilk, frankly. If you want to call in, whatever ilk you may happen to be, 427-3772 is the number to call. I am rolling out to get the city council agenda here, but while I do, let's take your calls.
You're on Free Radio.
Hi, Bob. This is Silver Knight.
Hey, Silver. All right.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Silver Knight.
As you well aware know, and everybody else, we're quite traumatized, but we our spirits not killed, and we're going to go forward. I wanted to just make a statement about the protest. I was there Friday,
mm-hmm.
and excuse me, I haven't had much sleep in a couple of days.
No problem.
in our defense, we did not enter the sheriff's office. There's mostly WHAM clients.
Right.
Predominantly, because there's a protocol and a respect for board members and for Valerie and Mike. At that point, we were acting on, of course, you know, pure adrenaline and addressing an emergent problem.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when I clear my head, I know that the office is closed. Your brain is not thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did need to leave some significant positive notes to Sam Farr, since he's recently come out to support
mm-hmm.
the Bonnie. Excuse me, Barney Frank Bill.
Mm-hmm.
But just in our defense, you know, I don't have to say that a lot of us are quite fragile, and the ones that can walk
right.
and get around and speak and are speaking for all of us. And WHAM, ones you never see there in bed that are never seen. So we're pulling on all our raw strength and just plain raw nerve and adrenaline.
Right on.
But I really deeply appreciate all the spontaneous community support. Even neighbors over here where I live came running over, outraged. Some that never smoked marijuana at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just the principle of the thing is